Hello and welcome to the Healthy Hustlers podcast. We're your happy hosts, Amy and Madeline, best friends who work hard and hustle harder. We believe to be happy and healthy in your work, you need to be happy and healthy in your life.
Through storytelling, we combine health, well-being and business with a fresh perspective to share the stories of normal people with inspiring lives. From leading entrepreneurs to athletes, models and artists, together we delve deep into their journey to success to find out why health and well-being is the core of their philosophy.
Whether you're looking for advice and guidance for leading your best life, an engaging, easy-to-digest pep talk, or a boost of healthy enthusiasm to fuel your health and wellness goals, the Healthy Hustlers podcast is your go-to for kicking ass in work and play.
A budding fast-paced career as a fashion journalist, Elle Halliwell seemed to have it all. But in 2016, after a visit to her local doctor, her life quickly turned into a nightmare. She was told that she had a rare form of leukemia, and just when she thought things couldn't get any worse, 2 days later, Elle found out that she was pregnant with her first child. Faced with an almighty decision, Elle embarked on an emotional roller coaster. Today, Elle is the mother to happy, healthy little boy Tor and the author of the incredibly heartfelt book, A Mother's Choice, which documents her journey and the decision to forego treatment until after the birth of her child. Welcoming us into her home in Bondi, we chat to this beautiful soul about her unimaginable journey, how she keeps a positive mindset, and why health and well-being has become her core philosophy.
Hi, Al. Welcome to the Healthy Hustlers podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. We are so excited to have you here today. Let's kick off by hearing about your happy place. Where do you go to unwind and reconnect?
Oh, I think it's always the bath. I do love a hot soak, to be fair. And I really make it a real experience. So I'll light a candle and I'll get my Epsom salts and my bicarb soda and a couple of drops of lavender if I'm, you know, feeling like I need to have a sleep, or I'll have some tea tree or some eucalyptus oil if I've got a cold or something like that. Sometimes I'll get like a nice warm tea, and I just find the bath's a really easy place to kind of meditate and just sit with your thoughts, and it's a really nice way to wind down at the end of the day. So I guess especially in winter right now, that's definitely my happy place.
Oh, that sounds incredible. We're from Melbourne, so that would definitely be nice in the Melbourne winter at the moment. The only thing, I don't have a bath, so.
Oh, no, we can use mine. Just give me a call, pop up.
Love it. I'll be calling you. Now, can you take us all the way back to your childhood and give us a sneak peek of little Al growing up?
So I grew up in Sydney's Northern Beaches, which is a pretty relaxed place to kind of grow up, lots of trees, lots of places to kind of run amok. We lived on Pittwater, which is like a beautiful little inlet of water, and I just have these memories of going down to the jetty at the end of our house and going fishing and wandering along like the mangroves and, you know, looking for crabs. I was a bit of a tomboy. I loved getting dirty. I loved going for treasure hunts and chasing ducks around and things like that. So I was definitely a very natural childhood. We'd often go on camping trips and stuff. My dad loved going in the caravan up the coast, and I just literally spend hours just making mud pies and exploring, things like that. So I was definitely not a girly girl growing up. So it was a really lovely childhood. I have two older sisters, so they were 10, they're 10 and 9 years older than me. So didn't really get to spend as much time with them as I would have liked growing up, but they were kind of like mothers to me in a respect. So they, you know, dress me up and things like that. So look, it was a really, really nice, blissful childhood, and I'm really grateful to my parents for giving me such a lovely place to grow up.
Today you are an author, journalist and mother to beautiful Tor, but your story is so much more than that. 2 years ago, your life changed forever when you were diagnosed with chronic myeloid leukemia, which is a form of blood cancer, and then 2 days later found out that you were pregnant with your first child. We actually can't even begin to imagine what you would have been feeling at this time, Elle, do you mind shedding some light on this experience? What was going through your mind?
Oh my gosh, it was such a mixture of nothing because, you know, you're in shock. I was still in shock from the cancer diagnosis. I guess because up until the moment that I was told that I had chronic myeloid leukemia, I'd never ever heard that word mentioned before. I had no idea what that meant. All I knew was that leukemia often was fatal and a very, very horrible way to die. And I guess those thoughts were going through my head when I was told that I had it. And I guess up until that point, I'd always been so focused on the future, my goals, what I wanted to achieve. And having that future completely ripped away and having nothing in front of you but blackness was really confronting. And I think that it really made me stop and be in the moment. So while it was a really devastating thing to happen, it was really the first time that I kind of practiced, being in the moment. But at the time, all I thought was, this is the worst thing that could ever happen to me. And then we spent the next couple of days telling our family, which was probably even harder than hearing that I had it. Me and my husband hadn't exactly been that careful when it came to contraception. We did want to have a baby later in the year. We weren't ready, but I was kind of focused on getting my body primed for having a baby. So that's why I went to the doctor in the first place to get a test to find out what my vitamin D levels were and my folate, things like that. And that's when they came back with abnormal platelet levels, which is the thing that kind of helps clot your blood. A few weeks later, we went out for dinner with some friends, and I wasn't sure whether I was going to be able to have a glass of wine because I thought maybe I'm pregnant. So I bought two pregnancy tests, and I took one and it came back negative. So I thought, okay, great, I can have a glass of wine. And then that spare test was sitting on the top of the fridge. And on the Saturday, 2 days after I was diagnosed, I kind of just had this weird feeling that I needed to take that extra test. Even though the first one had come back negative, I thought, could this get any worse? I don't know why I asked that question, but I thought I just needed to rule out, anything. So I took the test, and when it came back positive, it was just such a horrible feeling because it was something that I should have been so excited about, and all I could feel was dread because I didn't know what this meant for anything. And when I told my husband, he felt the same as well. We were just like, well, what does this mean? And we had the appointment with the hematologist on the Monday to find out exactly what that meant. And it was then that we were given, I guess, the choice to terminate the baby and go on fertility treatment. Then go straight on this medication that had come about that's basically completely changed the outlook for people with CML, or continue with the pregnancy, which was a big risk because I didn't know how the pregnancy was going to react with my CML, because CML is a disease which mainly affects men in their 60s. So I didn't have any of those kind of risk factors. And very few people had been in my situation around the world that I was later to find this out. So I was kind of a guinea pig. They didn't really know whether, the pregnancy might kind of speed up the cancer or slow it down. It was all very much an unknown, which was why they were, very kind of strongly suggested that I take option A. And so it was a really, really hard decision to make, because here I am still trying to figure out this whole CML thing, and then I've got to decide whether or not to keep my baby that I've wanted. So it was a really surreal experience at the time. And I think 2 years later, I can kind of look back at it without as much emotion. But at the time, I think I was still actually in shock over the leukemia itself. So it was, very, very strange.
Yeah, absolutely. My
goodness. I think there's two things that I want to ask you from that. Firstly, the fact that you went and, saw your doctor, wanting to get your body right, has almost saved your life in a way, or potentially you might not have found out that you had CML for a long time later, do you think?
I think having fallen pregnant, I probably would have found out a little bit earlier. But if I hadn't fallen pregnant either, I probably wouldn't have gotten a blood test. So, yeah, I probably would have found out when I'd started to experience symptoms. And often the symptoms show up when you're really in the fairly later stages of CML, which means that it's a lot harder to treat. So the fact that they caught it when it was fairly early was great. But then the fact that I had to wait 9 months was also a problem, because they just didn't know whether that was going to affect how I responded to the medication once I finally got on it. We're still not sure whether that did affect it or not. You know, if I had gone on it earlier, perhaps now I would have been in complete remission and had undetectable. At the moment, I'm still getting there. My levels are really low, but I still have the cancer cells in my body. So, look, I don't know, but, you know, if you'd asked me to make that choice, knowing where I was now, I would absolutely not have changed it for the world.
Yeah. And I guess we go to our doctors for that, you know, advice, and they have your best interests at heart, and they gave you that option A to, you know, abort the baby and start your treatment now or wait. How did you make that decision? I mean, how did you have the courage to go against almost the doctor's first, like, biggest recommendation to abort the baby?
Yeah.
That takes a lot of courage, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure you guys can agree. You go to the doctor and they say, this is what's wrong with you, this is what'll fix you. Mm. And you say, okay, and you take the pills, take all this, because they're your authority, you know what I mean? If someone in authority tells you something's X, then, you know, you do X.
Yeah.
But it was actually my husband who kind of shook me out of that mindset and was like, hang on, let's think about this logically. First of all, if you terminate the baby, then you have to wait until you get your period again to go on the fertility treatment.
Yeah.
That could take X months.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you've done that, then you can go, you know, on the drugs. So you're looking at maybe another 4 months of no treatment. So why wouldn't we maybe just wait an extra 3 or so months and then have the baby rather than, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he kind of made me think a bit more logically, and we also got a second opinion from a man down in South Australia who's a world expert in CML. And, you know, he said the same thing as well as my haematologist. He said, the safest route would be to, you know, to go on the fertility treatment and then go on the drugs sooner than later. But he said, I understand your predicament. It seems counterintuitive to abort a child to have fertility treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that just seems a bit wrong ethically. We absolutely agreed. And so that kind of gave us a little bit more confidence to kind of decide to keep the baby. But it wasn't easy. It was very scary. You know, you're looking at your own mortality. But I think that, you know, I'd gotten to that 12-week mark. Once I got there, I realised that this baby was in for the long run, and I had to give it the best shot of living as well. So it was a bit of a team effort, and I think it really, you know, brought me close to my baby.
Yeah.
I think that's really inspiring and does give a message to always evaluate the right option for you, and go and get that second opinion. Not always just take the authorities, you know, recommendation.
Yeah.
Because they're not in your shoes and they're not living in your life every day. And of course, we're not saying not to listen to doctors, but just explore every, you know, the option that's right for you and get that second opinion.
Absolutely.
It's
a good point.
So prior to having CML, your lifestyle was quite demanding with a career as a fashion journalist. Who was Elle back then, and what did your days look like?
Oh, God. She was so different. She was selfish, and not in a, like, a really nasty way, but I guess, you know, I didn't really think much about the environment or, I don't know, the world in general. I was very much kind of internally focused. I was very stressed out. My priorities were all messed up. My values were not adhered to properly. And I think I was living life for other people. From the outside, it looked like I kind of had everything. You know what I mean? I had this great job and I was a red carpet. But inside, I was full of anxiety, full of stress. I did not look after my body properly. It was right down the list of my priorities. Work always came first. Health was really low. I missed so many birthdays and anniversaries and weddings because I was always working. And, you know, I think spiritually that can be really detrimental. And I think that can manifest itself physically. So I was constantly sick. Every time that I went on holidays, I'd get ill because my body finally had a chance to kind of rest and my immune system could take a bit of a break, I think. And so I was constantly ill, constantly overstressed, and just not a great person. I think if you ask other people, they might not say that I was a terrible person or anything, but in my mind, I wasn't the person that I would have admired. And when I kind of was diagnosed and the dust had settled a bit and I was really kind of reevaluating my life, I thought about my death and, you know, if it was to happen. And I wondered whether or not I felt like I would have been happy to go at that point. And I felt like in one way, I felt like I'd achieved a lot of things that I'd wanted to achieve, but I wasn't the person I wanted to be. And so that kind of made me think, well, if I do get this second chance, then I want to change that. I want to be a person that I admire. I want to be a person that my baby, if it all works out, will admire. I want to set a good example for them, you know, to make sure that you know, you have values and you abide by them and that you're true to yourself and what you believe in and, you know, that you tread lightly on the world. And having gotten that second chance, now I've got to live up to that promise, and it's not easy, but I'm working on it. And I feel like every morning I wake up and I think, you know, how am I going to be a better person today?
Wow. I'm like, almost don't know what to say. That's just so incredible and like so powerful. And I think there's probably, you know, a lot of people who wouldn't have gone through half as much as you have, but are living in those careers or doing those things that they're just going by and missing out. Like, you know, like I even know when I first started in a career of just, you know, I never exercised and I wouldn't go to dinners because I was like, oh, I have to work later. I've got an event on the weekend. And it is when you step back from that so important to really focus on what you want out of life. And, yeah, you know, we're only here for a short time. So
that's right. And I think, yeah, when you're a young woman and you're trying to break into an industry that you want, especially an industry, you know, like ours, like the media, you know, the only way is to really work very, very hard. But I think that we can kind of lose ourselves and become so obsessed with people pleasing and making sure that we have this certain image that we kind of neglect other areas of our lives that are really, really important at the time. And I think it's only when you start to get into your late 20s that you kind of, once you start ticking off those bucket list goals, you go, am I more satisfied than I was back then? And I don't think that we necessarily are, unless those other aspects of your life are also in line. You know, if you can feel happy with the person that you are, not just what you achieved. So I think that that's, you know, something that a lot of women struggle with. And I wish, you know, that I'd learnt those lessons when I was a bit younger.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for sharing that and being so open and honest already. This is amazing. We're just loving chatting to you. So, yeah, as we've mentioned, your story is just so incredibly inspiring. We've both been in tears many times reading your story or hearing you speak about your journey. I guess I'd love to understand how going through such a horrific experience and such a roller coaster ride, you have been able to keep such a positive mindset.
I think that putting everything into constant perspective really helped. When I was going through it, I thought to myself, you know, yes, I've got leukemia. Yes, that's really bad. And a lot of other people are in much better situations than me right now. But, you know, I'd get out of bed every morning and I'd say, wow, I can get out of bed. And, you know, I'd kind of do a bit of a mental assessment of my body and go, okay, I'm not feeling terrible today. You know, I don't have too many aches and pains. You know, I've got enough energy to get out of bed. This is pretty good. You know, a lot of other people with leukemia don't have this, you know, ability to kind of get out of bed and go for a walk. And so I think just literally thinking of that, the fact that I, you know, was able to kind of get up and do things that a lot of other people couldn't, made me feel pretty blessed. So I think if you look at it from that kind of microcosm and go, I'm a lot better than that dude or that person, I think that really helped with my mental state. And remembering that, especially when I was, you know, feeling a bit sorry for myself, I think that that really helped. And also kind of thinking about my goal. So that was to literally just keep my baby alive and to make it to that point. And whenever I kind of thought about that, all of the other little niggles disappeared. You know, I didn't really think about anything else except making sure that this little guy was okay. And for me, that meant, okay, so I'm going to go for a walk this morning. And then I'm going to eat a really healthy lunch, you know, nourish us both. And then tonight I'm going to have a really nice sleep. I'm going to do a bit of meditation. And that's all I can do. You know, I'm doing the best that I can and not worrying about anything else. And it was actually that mindset and just trying to be in the moment and not thinking too far about the future was one of the biggest things that helped my anxiety, which pretty much disappeared when I was pregnant, which was quite amazing because it's something that I'd battled since I was in my early 20s. And that was amazing. And I think it was literally just focusing on the present. That they tell you a lot, you know, is one of the keys to not having anxiety. Yeah. But it's really hard to put into practice when, you know, you've got things to do. You've got children to look after or you've got a job that you've got to go to or bills to pay. You know, it's easier said than done. But for me, I mean, having something as momentous as getting a cancer diagnosis kind of forces you to go, okay, everything else can fuck off right now. I got something a little bit bigger to deal with. Thank you very much. Totally. And yeah, I think it was just getting rid of that clutter that really, really actually helped me mentally.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think that's, I love what you said about being grateful, you know, for the situation you're in. And I think everyone, no matter what they're going through, can really take something from that. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I think it's really beautiful and I hope everyone takes something from it.
Thanks, girls.
So in 2016, you then gave birth to a very happy, healthy little baby boy, Tor. And not long after you began your treatment, where are you at now and how are you going juggling being a mum, working and your own personal health and wellness goals?
Oh, it's a struggle. I'm not going to lie. It's not easy. But I still kind of look back and think, wow, I can't believe that I got through that and that the outcome was so positive, because not everyone has such a good, you know, good outlook as I did. So, for that, I'm really grateful. And so when things do start getting a bit overwhelming, I just have to kind of stop and think, just remember that this is your second chance and life's not that bad. You're still here. And I think just being able to celebrate every day above ground is kind of enough to kind of, you know, make you think, all right, today's not such a bad day. But yeah, look, it is tough because you just go back to, in many, you know, senses, just your daily life again, and you've got all of those pressures and, you know, yeah, I'm back working 4 days a week and juggling a little human, which is a big responsibility. But I think just always trying to remember what happened and the fact that I'm not better yet. So at the moment, CML, it's a chronic cancer, and I'm on a oral form of chemotherapy. I take it twice a day and I fast for 3 hours each day. So it's not it's not a terrible thing to have to do, but it is a bit, you know, of an inconvenience and a little bit of an adjustment. But look, if that means that I'll be on that for the rest of my life, but I'll still have it the rest of my life, then that's a pretty good bargain, I think. I'm currently close to undetectable, but not there yet. Fingers crossed, it'll happen soon. I think about 50% of people have managed, once they get to that point, to go off the medication and have the cancer not start returning. But I'm always going to have these chromosomes which have broken apart and reattached improperly. So in that respect, I'll always have CML in a way. But whether or not I'll be able to get to the point where it literally doesn't affect my life at all, that would be amazing. But yeah, look, at the moment I'm just kind of trying to live my best life now and focus on, you know, my health and wellness. And I think as well, having a little human to also worry about in that respect is really good, because you kind of will, you know, be really kind of on top of their health and stuff like that. And you think, well, if I'm feeding them that food, which is so healthy and organic and natural, I have to do the same for myself. So it's good, because we're kind of working as a bit of a team, you know what I mean? Yeah. So that's good, and I'm trying to make sure that Tor has as healthy a start as possible, because I know that, you know, he didn't when he was in my stomach, I guess. But yeah, so it's a constant struggle, but I'm getting there.
You're amazing.
Honestly. Oh, girl, stop it!
As we keep saying that, but honestly, I think... I just hope it doesn't take everyone to go through what you have to have, I guess, the new wisdom that and the way that you now live your life. I think it's so important to keep spreading your message and being that voice for people like everyday girls like us, really, and everyone, not just girls.
Yeah, I think, you know, if we keep remembering that, especially, you know, here in Australia, we're part of 0.5% of the world that has access to clean water every day, enough food, and just to be part of that tiny percentage, when you think about it, is so amazing. And we're so fortunate.
Absolutely.
We have cars that we can drive around, you know, we can afford to wear nice clothes, let alone, you know, buy clothes at all. And that's something that we should all be kind of celebrating, and I think just constantly keeping in our mind. And I think that with that, though, also comes a really big responsibility to set an example to the world about protecting what we have. And that's one thing that I found that once I had gave birth to Tor, I became really, really concerned with. And I was listening to a podcast by Marianne Williamson, who wrote the book A Course in Miracles. And she made a really good point, saying that we're the only animal species that has systematically destroyed our own habitat. And that just sounds crazy, doesn't it? That we've done that. And she also kind of talked about how protective a mother is of her cubs, and how she will literally do whatever she can to kind of protect her environment, to make it safe for her children. And I think that having had Tor has made me very much acutely aware of the footprint that I'm leaving on the world. So I've become very environmentally conscious. So things like, you know, going to Scoop Whole Foods or Naked Foods and you know, buying in bulk and trying not to use plastic and consume and things like that, that's become a really big focus to me as well. And I think that and, you know, good health go hand in hand. But I think that's something that we all really have to be very aware of and focus on, because I feel like we're kind of getting to that point where, as Marianne said as well, it's like trying to turn around the Titanic. Yeah. Are we going to be able to do it before we hit the iceberg? That's what I'm concerned about. And I think having children really makes you think, how do I want to leave this earth for the next generation?
Yeah, it's so funny how amazing our lifestyle is. As you said, we can jump in our car and drive down the street and you know, we've got so much infrastructure around us, clean water, but how much stress that has actually put in our lifestyle. Mads and I have been really lucky to work for a company that does a lot of development work over in Uganda, and I've been very lucky to go over there and witness that and see the children who and the families that have not even half at what we have here in our lives, but how happy they are and satisfied with the little things that they have.
Yep.
And yeah, I find that over here in our Western world, it's amazing and we are so lucky, but we do take a lot for granted. And just to keep up and with striving for more and more, we're quite unsatisfied in general with what we have, and we always strive for the new handbag or the next, you know, bigger car.
Yeah. It's like a mouse wheel, isn't it? Like, it just keeps going and going. The more you have, the more you want. And I think it's not until we kind of get our our heads right and sort that kind of part of it that we're going to continue to want and to waste and to use and consume. But it's really hard. Like, it's actually one of the hardest things, I think, that you have to do, is to try and kind of break away from that rat race and, you know, from wanting and from that barrage of advertising and people saying you're not a good enough person unless you have this new Gucci handbag.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, really tough. And I get it. You know, working in fashion, you're constantly bombarded with things.
Yeah, totally.
And for you guys too, obviously.
Oh, definitely. I definitely know better than that, but I do find myself wanting to buy the $600 leather jacket.
Yes.
You know, it's navy, so I've got two black ones, but I really need this blue one. It will change my life.
Yep.
And, you know, 5 minutes later you've worn it once and it doesn't have that same satisfaction, really, does it? You know?
No. Like, you remember when you were little and you would kind of go, I just need that new bike. And if I have that new bike, I will never want for anything ever again. Like, that is it. Nothing. And then you get the new bike and a week later you're like, oh, I want a scooter. I just need the scooter and then everything will be perfect. We don't grow out of that.
No, we don't. Absolutely. My daughter Lily often, she's 8, and she will say to me, we'll be at Kmart or somewhere, and she's like, Mum, I really, really need that slime. I'll pay for it out of my bank account. I'll pay you back, I promise. I just really need it.
Yeah.
She probably has lots of slime at home. Really? She really does.
But we're not better, are we? No. Oh, I just want that leather jacket. And then I won't want anything else again, even though I've got two black ones in my closet already.
I'm sure my husband would actually say that I'm worse than Lily. Sometimes when it comes to a leather jacket, probably. So you've said that you obviously now put such an emphasis on your health and wellness, and you've spoken about, you know, going to the shop and buying bulk whole foods and, you know, reducing your plastic. Is there anything else that you now do to have a less impact on the environment?
Lots of little things. Like, I'm trying to just, reuse containers that I have. Buying in bulk. That's really important. What else?
Or just changes to your lifestyle in general, even just without the impact on the environment. Just
From when I was first diagnosed, I did do a really big life detox. So I swapped all my Teflon pans and saucepans over to stainless steel, and I got rid of all of the kind of harsh chemical detergents in the house, and I swapped over, you know, my skincare for healthier options. It's a bit of a minefield though, because the more, it's kind of like going down the rabbit hole in a way. Absolutely. Because you kind of, you'll buy a product which you think is really super healthy and you'll start using that, and then you'll really kind of start focusing on, hang on, it's healthier than, you know, the Ajax spray and wipe, but is it the healthiest? And so you start going, hang on, these are all natural ingredients, so the packaging says, but they're also man-made and adjusted. Like, I'm studying at the moment a diploma of natural medicine. I can't remember what it's called. Western Herbal Therapeutics? No, that's the other one. No, I think it's Western Herbal Therapeutics. No, sorry, girls. it's a natural medicine advanced diploma at Nature Care. I can't remember the exact name because it does change, but it's naturopathy. And we were just studying the components of ginger, right? And one of their elements in ginger is linalool, which is a volatile oil. So I was researching linalool, and I looked up on one of the consumer databases that talks about ingredients and things like that, and it came up with it being a 5 in terms of its health rating. And I thought, hang on, that's weird, because that comes from ginger. Like, that's a natural item, but it can actually cause irritation for people. But that's only when it's extracted from the ginger. So hence, you're kind of taking it from its collective ingredients, which is all packaged nicely in this ginger, which is really good for you. And then it's been extracted. And so that by itself is actually can be a bit toxic if you have too much of it or it comes in contact with your skin. And so I think that the further away we get from just using whole ingredients that have come from the ground, that's when we start to get into trouble. So I think that we've got to realize that just because it comes from nature doesn't mean it's necessarily that good for you if it's been processed and manufactured and changed and, you know, done all of these things. So for me, I'm still kind of getting to that point where I'm starting to kind of reduce further the chemicals in my life, whether they're even natural or synthetic. So,
and that can be really hard, especially when you have a really busy lifestyle. I know for me, I really want to take all of the harsh chemicals out of my home with the cleaning products. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I went and bought, you know, all of the essential oils and all of the more natural, I guess, products.
Yep.
And decided to cancel my cleaner.
Yeah.
Because she cleans with Ajax and bleach. Yes. And all of those things. But then my life started falling apart without my cleaner. And it's literally just finding that balance. I mean, I've just got to really probably sit down and do the research and find a cleaner that uses natural products. Mm. But it is that balance of a busy lifestyle and, yes. and doing your research and being prepared. I think being prepared is a big one.
And all of that stress and anxiety that you've put on that issue there, is that more detrimental to actually just being in contact with some of those toxic ingredients if you're nice and calm and collected? So there's always that balance between being kind of grounded and happy and calm, or, you know, trying to do everything perfectly. And I think that that's what we're going to do. We're going to relax a bit. Try and do your best, but don't stress out if, you know, there's nothing to eat except for the, you know, packet of chips at your desk or something. Because if you start agonizing over it, you know, the cortisol is going to start running through your system. Your adrenals are going to be, you know, going at a crazy pace. And that's probably doing just as much damage as eating the bloody chips, right?
Totally. I 100% agree with you there. And I think it totally is a rabbit warren. I've probably more gone down it in the food path rather than the cleaning products or the chemicals. That's one that is on my list. It's just, you know, work in progress. But we've really tried to limit preservatives, so buying anything really from a packet. And it's just crazy. I literally, my shopping now takes me like hours, and my fiance and I literally stand in the supermarket and he's down one aisle and I'm down the other, and we're reading the back of things, and I'm like, you know, all of this stuff we've actually been eating for years and we've been probably quite fine, but now that we're trying to change that in our diet, especially, you know, thinking about having a family soon and those sort of things, you know, want to get your body ready and make sure that you're definitely bringing a human in the best way possible. But it is a rabbit warren, and it's like, where do you draw the line almost?
Yes, so, that's right. And you can read a book from an expert saying this is the way to perfect health, and then you read something that's completely conflicting by another expert saying, no, this is the way to complete health. And I think we're overthinking everything.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, like there were all of these studies done where animals were observed, and if a goat was sick, it would go and eat a certain grass because it knew that that was what was going to help it. And when it was healthy, it would eat another grass. And it's that instinct that we've all lost. We're so bombarded with all these different ideas and different ways of thinking that we've stopped listening to our own bodies and going, hang on, what do I really feel like? What's my body crying out for? Do I need, you know, a whole glass of orange juice, or do I really need a big steak because I'm, you know, feeling a bit low in iron? We're no longer listening to that intuitive little voice in our bodies telling us what to eat. And I think that that's probably what we've got to try and focus on the most, is not listening to all the noise and just kind of going, hang on, what does my body need at this moment? You know, rather than following a certain dogma about what you should eat, because I think that that's where we all kind of get a little bit confused with. And some people will start kind of one kind of dietary path, and then even if it's not making them feel so good, they kind of feel like they've gotten to the point of no return, and they almost can't change it because in their mind that would be a disappointment to them, even if their body's craving something. So I think it's just about letting go of all of that, you know, craziness and telling you what to do, and just go, okay, this is what I'm going to eat today. Yeah, and that's it.
Absolutely. And it goes back to that whole holistic approach, doesn't it? Like, you know, if you need to go for a walk, go for a walk. If you want to eat something, or you're a little bit hungover and you need to eat fast food, like, just do it, because it actually does bring a lot more happiness and calmness to your life than fighting what you think is wrong or shouldn't be done, or putting too many boundaries probably is the right
way of saying it. Eat food that makes you feel good.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, and going back to that little, you know, intuitive voice, do you have any tools that you use to slow down and just actually listen to your body for anyone else out there that, you know, is in the hustle and bustle and really wants to step back and...
Yeah, look, I think everyone's got their own thing that they do. For me, just kind of taking a minute to breathe is really good because it slows my whole body down and I just get into a little bit more of a state of calmness and I can focus better, things like that, even with, if that's just like a little walk with a, you know, some deep breaths or a bath. You know, it does change. It depends on, you know, how much time I have, things like that. But, yeah, I think taking little moments throughout the day rather than one big moment is probably better.
Yeah, that's great. Would you consider yourself a spiritual person, or has your experience allowed you to connect more deeply with yourself?
Yeah, I think I've always been spiritual. I'm not religious, but I do believe that there is a higher intelligence that, especially, you know, the more that I'm learning about our bodies and how, you know, atoms are formed and how they, you know, create chemical reactions and all of the amazing things that our bodies do without us even thinking about them or having to do anything is pretty amazing. And you just wonder how that could possibly be an accident. Mm. And I think about my, you know, my own journey and this second chance that I've got. And I kind of do feel like we are here to each live a purpose. And I feel really lucky that I've been able to find that purpose at the age that I did. I don't think everyone necessarily will find that in their lives. So, of course, I believe that there's something else out there. And I think I'm not scared of dying. I don't know, this is getting very deep. Maybe the physical act of dying, that's probably the scariest. But I think what happens after, I'm not scared because I just know that it's fine. And whatever happens is going to be beautiful. But, whether there's a man with a beard upstairs... I think the jury's still out on that. But I think it's also nice to have faith, whether it is in God or, Allah, whatever. I think it is nice to have faith as long as that helps you to lead a better life from a personal point of view. And I think that everyone's spiritual or religious journey is very personal. And I think that as long as we don't try and push it on other people and that it, you know, encourages us to do the right thing and do the right thing by other people, I think that that can't be bad.
Yeah, that is so beautiful. And I think that, like, I consider myself quite a spiritual person, but my grandmother, I've been raised in a very Catholic family. My grandmother, who's still here, she's 93 and very active. She's amazing, but she's very strong Catholic. And I think I'm always being quite respectful to the religion because of what it brings her.
Yes.
And the older I get, I probably think that there's actually not much difference in what I believe and what she does. It's just that we look at it in a different way, or yeah, we, I guess, pray or talk to a different person, or, yes, you know. That's really beautiful. And I think everyone can take a bit from that and realise that, you know, there is definitely something bigger and higher than ourselves.
Yeah,
and tap into that and to let it be there almost.
Absolutely. And if it does, you know, bring a sense of community, then that's not a bad thing at all, is it?
Yeah, absolutely.
It brings people closer together.
Yeah, totally agree. Now, we just have a few of our favourite little questions before we wrap up, although we really don't want to wrap this one. We could talk to you all day. So, what would you say your number one health tip is?
I mean, there are little things that you could say, like, oh, make sure you use a tongue scraper in the morning. But I think it's more just relax. Don't overthink anything. Just, you know, eat to nourish your body and, you know, just look after your body as much as you can. But also have fun. You know, we've only got one life. YOLO. So as long as it doesn't impact you mentally, then do it.
That's great advice. I think it goes back to what you said earlier as well, when we were talking about the old Elle and how she always had goals and she knew what her future was. You can get so caught up in that so quickly, and sometimes it's like, just let it go and be in this moment and enjoy it, because, yeah, you know, it goes by pretty quick.
Yes.
Even the years, they're flying. So we're in June. It's crazy.
Oh, my God. Wow.
So what would one thing we can all do to bring more balance to our lives so the hustle can be healthy?
I think we all need to give ourselves a bit of a break. Be kind to ourselves, to that little inner voice. You know, if we start berating ourselves for something that we ate or something that we did, or, you know, a fuck up at work, don't berate yourself, because you've got to live in your own mind 24 hours a day. And I think being kind to ourselves leads to us being kinder to others.
Yeah. I need to implement that one into my life.
Yes.
Especially the fuck ups at work. No, I'm only joking. What advice would you give to your younger self?
That work isn't the be-all and end-all of your whole life, and that it's okay to put yourself first and not worry so much about, you know, what your employers or, you know, the people that you look up to will think about you. I think just, yeah, being truer to yourself is the most important thing.
Oh, I really love that. And finally, for all the foodies listening, what does a day on your plate look like, Elle?
Oh my gosh. Look, it really does differ. I'll start my day, depending on how busy it is, I'll just kind of listen to my body and, you know, so that might start with a soy flat white or a chai if I'm kind of having more of a relaxing day. I tend to not eat breakfast every day, only when my body kind of feels like it. I recently found out that I've got an intolerance to egg and milk, which sucks. So breakfast might be avocado on toast or mushrooms on toast or something like that if I'm feeling that way, or, you know, birch and muesli. And then for lunch, if I have a big breakfast, I'll probably have something really light at lunch, like a couple of pieces of fruit or something pretty plain. But I do love cooking, so look, it could be anything from like a steak with a really beautiful rocket salad to like a really nice salad sandwich. So I really try not to limit myself. You know, I kind of just go with what I'm feeling. And then at night we actually get a service called Marley Spoon, because it got to the point where me and my husband had very different ideas of what dinner looked like. And while I would love to kind of have a beautiful organic meal every night, it's just not possible. So it means that if I'm running late to get home, he knows that there's a recipe there that he needs to follow, and it's packed full of vegetables. So we're really, you know, happy to have that. So that will could be anything from, I don't know, like a beautiful stir fry or something like that. It changes, like it's really varied, which is really good. But generally, yeah, just a very healthy veggie packed dinner with either, you know, meat or grains. So yeah, pretty standard to be honest. It's not very it's not a very exciting meal plan, I guess.
Sounds delicious.
But it's just it's easy, it's attainable, and it's something that, you know, me and my family can stick with all the time. And I've got a little veggie garden out the back too, which I love to kind of pick the lettuce from, and beautiful spinach and herbs and stuff like that.
Nice. Well, I think there's two things that people can take out of that. One is that you eat by listening to your body and what you feel like, and you don't put too much pressure on yourself to, you know, eat a certain way. If you want a sandwich for lunch, you'll have a sandwich. If you want a salad, you'll have a salad. And then secondly, I love that you know, go and get something like Marley Spoon because it fits in with your busy lifestyle. It you know, it is full of veggies. It might not be organic, but, you know, you're making the best choice for your family. And I get to that situation too. We get HelloFresh quite a lot.
Oh, yeah. HelloFresh is great too.
Yeah, or Aussie Farmers Direct, because that's exactly the same. Like, my husband can, there's a recipe and he will follow it. I don't get a phone call saying, so what are we having for dinner tonight?
Yes, that's right. You get home and there's like a piece of chicken on a plate with nothing, and you go, but well, that's not dinner. He's like, well, yes, it is.
It's dinner for me.
Yeah, that's right. try.
Elle, thank you so very much for chatting with us today. We have learnt so much and we're continually inspired by you.
Thanks, girl. We're so grateful for your time and for you sharing your journey without fear with us. So I know our listeners will get so much out of that, and we've just loved meeting you, and we can't wait for our fresh orange juice now.
Yes, that's right. I did promise. No, thank you. You guys are a real inspiration to me, spreading the word of health and wellness and, you know, loving yourself. So, yeah, thank you for having me on.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, girls.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you leave us a 5-star review and subscribe so you can keep up to date with our new episodes each week. For a dose of weekly happy, healthy news, you can subscribe to our newsletter via our website at thehealthyhustlers.com. Until next week, make sure that you're investing in yourself to keep the hustle healthy.